So thank you, Dr. Murthy. And before I begin, I'd like to say a big thank you to the International Health Section for giving me the opportunity to talk about very beginning stages of my work, which is really using data from large health surveys that are conducted in developing countries. And for, I would say for many developing countries, they are the source of first national level estimates related to intimate partner violence. And, and that is certainly the case for all three of the countries that I'm looking at. And as you can see, I have a really, really long title, quite a mouthful, so I will not even try to repeat it. Okay, so very often I'm asked why Central Asia? And this is also, and Central Asia, and the three countries are also the first part of the mouthful in my title. And as you can see, Kazakhstan is a really, really big country in terms of size. It's an upper middle income country, has a lot of reserves of oil and petroleum and natural reserves, other natural reserves. Comparatively, Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan are really small, very poor countries. Kyrgyzstan recently experienced a lot of political violence. And these three countries, you know, which were a part of the Soviet, former Soviet Union, they were virtually unknown to the world. But now they occupy a really, really important position in world affairs. And primarily because of their economic significance and political significance as well. Economic because the Central Asian region in itself is really rich in oil and petroleum. And political significance because, as you can see, all three countries are close to Russia. All three share a border with China and are very close to the volatile Afghanistan as well. And I would say after the 2001 September 11 attacks in the US, they were literally thrust onto the world center stage because the US started using them as a military base, and Kyrgyzstan still has a US military base. And in the recent years, all the Central Asian region has experienced mass migration, still is. Health problems have gone up, and drug trafficking, sexual trafficking, violence against women has also seen increases. And another important factor is that Central Asia is, as of now, is experiencing one of the fastest growth rates of HIV and AIDS epidemic in the world. And another question that I'm very frequently asked is, why should the US care about it? And I'm asked that question very often because I try to get funds for my work. I really don't get any funds because they're like, what do we have to do with that? And so what I say is that, you know, the US is the largest single country donor for each of the republics. And the US president's Emergency Relief Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, which is called the largest component of the president's global health initiative, provides a lot of funds to these countries, you know, to improve their response for HIV and AIDS. And also in recognition of the fact that intimate partner violence, or IPV, is in itself a huge public health issue, but is also a significant factor, risk factor for HIV and AIDS prevention. So it's important to think about it when you're thinking about health programs. And US government also gives a lot of money for training IPV advocates in these republics. So it does have a stake, you know, in making sure that things work. Intimate partner violence, it's a huge global public health issue, a human rights violation issue also. And in the past two decades, I'll say that the international community has made a lot of efforts to, you know, produce more reliable and comparable data on intimate partner violence to help inform national policies and also to monitor progress towards international development goals. And some of the notable initiatives are the World Health Organization's multi-country study, World Safe Studies on Abuse, and some other initiatives as well. But the reality still remains that most of the knowledge about IPV still comes from the developed world, not necessarily applicable to the developing world. And even little attention has been paid to the underlying attitudes that may give rise to intimate partner violence. And I think study of attitudes is very important because attitudes have been shown to be associated with occurrence of IPV itself, then whether the victims come forward to seek help for that. And also the response of the family and the community towards IPV. And I also think that knowledge about attitudes towards IPV is very important for the success of other health programs, and I'm going to talk about it a little later in the presentation. And finally, I am from India, I am in the US, and I feel in a globalized world, all of us are moving across nations and cultures so much that knowledge about attitudes can be very helpful for receiving countries, you know, to design culturally relevant interventions for the immigrant groups. The second part of the mouthful in my title is the name of the survey itself, Multiple Indicator Cluster Surveys. These are supported by UNICEF, are really large, nationally representative household sample surveys, and they are conducted in collaboration with the local governments. And something that never fails to amaze me is the response rates for these surveys, higher than 90%. Even for a country like Iraq, you know, it's very difficult. And the data that I'm using is from the third round of MICS, which was conducted in 51 countries, and MICS data are really the key source for monitoring the progress towards Millennium Development Goals. And in the third round, they actually included an optional module on attitudes towards IPV in recognition of the fact that it's a huge public health issue. As I said, sample sizes are really big. In-person interviews with reproductive age women were conducted with more than 14,000 women in Kazakhstan, almost 7,000 in Kyrgyzstan, and more than 10,000 in Tajikistan. So in MICS 3, women were asked if, in their opinion, a husband is justified in hitting or beating his wife in the following five situations. If she goes out without telling him, neglects the children, argues with him, refuses to have sex with him, or if she burns the food. So these are like five situations. Simple questions, but very carefully, I would say, selected so as to, in a way, you know, kind of capture the variation in the seriousness of the so-called behavioral norm that is violated by the women. Study aims are twofold. Simply to examine the prevalence of acceptance of IPV among women. These data have not been used before, so I think let's start with the simplest thing. And secondly, to describe the individual family and community characteristics associated with acceptance of IPV. Okay, so here is the graph, which always is so striking, because if you, 75% of the women, or like three in every four women, in Tajikistan, they say that it is justified, it's okay for a husband to beat his wife for at least one of the five reasons. And almost half of the women in Kyrgyzstan say that. And there are definitely variations in terms of the scenarios that you're looking at. There is higher justification or higher acceptance for if she argues with him, if she goes out without telling him, neglects children. Again, very comparable with findings from other developing countries. And even for something like burns food, if you look at Tajikistan, more than 40% of the women say it is a justified reason for beating. And a lot of my friends in the US find it very weird that a question like that would be asked, you know. But I am from India, it's very much a reality for a lot of women in India, and I always tell them that till about a few years back, when I was in the marriage market, it was not unusual for guys or the families to ask me, you know, if I knew how to cook. So it is very much a reality for us. Now, if you look at age and acceptance of IPV, it is disturbing in a way to see that the highest acceptance is among the youngest age group, 15 to 19. Yeah. And these are like, no, it surprises me all the time. I wouldn't like expect that. But 85% of the women in 15 to 19 age group, these are married women though. They say that it is justified for a man to beat his wife for at least one of the reasons. Some of the other individual characteristics. If you look at individual countries, there are certain women in certain ethnic groups who are more likely to say that acceptance, who are more likely to accept. For instance, in Tajikistan, it's basically high for all the groups except for women who are Russian. So really high for Kyrgyz women, Tajik women, Uzbek women. In Kyrgyzstan, very high for Uzbek women. But if you see across all three countries, women who are Russian seem to have significantly lower acceptance levels. And you might be wondering, why am I using a variable which is mother tongue of the household head and talking about it in terms of like ethnic groups? This is how the UNICEF people and the mixed people use it. And the level of inter-ethnic marriages is not very high or not very common. So I thought it does make sense to use it as an ethnic group proxy. In terms of the education level, women who have high levels of education tend to have low acceptance levels. However, the maximum reduction in terms of acceptance levels are seen in women who have like the highest education levels. And even among them, if you look at Tajikistan, women who have highest education, even among them, 46% of them say that it's okay for a man to, you know, hit his wife for any one of the five reasons. Some of the family characteristics, these are some of the few factors that I've looked at. Women who who are married at lower ages tend to have high levels of acceptance. Doesn't matter in Kazakhstan, though. Spousal age difference is important in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. In Tajikistan, it doesn't really matter because it's high, irrespective of whether the wife is older or same age or what the difference is between the husband and the wife. And women in the richest quintiles tend to have lower acceptance levels as compared to women in the poorer households. Some of the community characteristics, women living in the rural areas tend to have slightly high acceptance levels, not so in Kazakhstan though. And capital cities in all three countries have significantly lower acceptance levels. And you do see that certain regions have higher levels. Tajikistan, I don't think it really matters. South, north, east, wherever you go, it's pretty high. In Kyrgyzstan, the southern region specifically has very high levels. And this is also the region which has seen a lot of ethnic violence since independence. And it also borders with Tajikistan and Uzbekistan and has been the site of, I would say, a very high level of revival of Islam, really strict Islam, and a lot of strict rules and regulations on women. So these were some of the factors. These were definitely not all the characteristics that I looked at. I also was really interested in looking at women who were in polygamous versus monogamous marriages, but all the questions are not asked in all the countries. So this question was only asked in Kyrgyzstan, and only 1 point something women said that they were in polygamous marriages, which should not be true because it's quite prevalent, but it is illegal at the same time. So it's understandable that they're not going to tell you about it. So in summary, 3 in 4 women in Tajikistan and half in Kyrgyzstan believe IPV is justified in at least one scenario. We often talk about women as an oppressed group, and the numbers definitely seem to attest to that, at least in certain countries. And Kazakhstan, in comparison to Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, have like 12% level of acceptance, which I think needs a little bit of exploration, because there was another survey that was conducted in 1999, which was also a really large health survey. And the data I'm using is from 2005 and 2006. So a survey that was conducted in 1999 used exactly the same questions, and it was also a national level survey. And the acceptance levels that they got was like more than 30%. So it's a little difficult to imagine that in 5 years there has been a drastic difference in terms of attitude. So I think that probably the context in which the questions were placed in the two surveys might be responsible for some of the differences in the estimates. Then poor, less educated women and women of specific ethnic groups have higher levels of acceptance. Spousal age difference was significantly associated in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. Women married at younger ages and women in rural areas were more tolerant of IPV in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. In certain regions in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan have significantly higher levels of acceptance. Some of the implications, I think such high IPV tolerance levels in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan warrant urgent attention of public health researchers and practitioners. And remember that these are first time that data on national level are available for Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. And although I think education and economic growth definitely can help in terms of bringing down acceptance levels a little bit, but I think the real challenge is to confront cultural norms about gender identities, women's rights, and wife abuse. And specific interventions may be needed for different population groups, regions, and rural-urban populations. And most importantly, I think knowledge about attitudes may need to be incorporated in health-related programs, example, HIV prevention, because if in a country a large proportion of women feel that it's justified for a husband to beat his wife if she argues with him or refuses to have sex with him, then you know, then she's not going to talk to him about like condoms or condom negotiation or all that kind of stuff. And even if they feel that it's justified for him to beat the wife if she goes out without telling him, then it also has implications for women being able to step out and make use of the other health programs that might be available. So I think it's really important. And for those people who ask me, why US, why should we care? I always tell them that US is the largest single country donor. And since you are giving money, you know, so you would want to make sure that it's being used effectively. So one way would be to incorporate knowledge about attitudes in the HIV prevention programs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Manisha, for that very passionate presentation.